So welcome, good afternoon. I got the honor to present to the on the best time slot we have at this conference, after lunch, and in a small room where it gets hot. So it will be interesting for you not to fall asleep. I'll try to do my best for that part. For emergency case, if you have water, breathe sparingly, we need the air, we have 70 minutes. But on the other hand, we have a nice topic, and that will keep us awake, I guess. It's Team Foundation Server best practices. It's definitely about Team Foundation Server, it's about quality, how does quality fit in the world of a Team Foundation Server, and it's about customization of Team Foundation Server, about the possibility to adopt it into your own processes, into your own company. My name is Nino, I'm from Germany, I live and work there, and yeah, this is my daily bread, as I usually tell people, this is what I do every day. I walk into companies, I tell them, you need a Team Foundation Server, you want that thing. I analyze what they do, what they don't do, what they should do, and I support and train the people, install the Team Foundation Server. Has anyone tried to install Team Foundation Server? Yeah, my bad. So you know what I'm talking about. It can be an interesting job. Nevertheless, I know who I am. For me, the most interesting part of presenting or preparing a presentation for Dev Days was, who are you? I had no clue. I thought maybe, okay, there were only 20 people in the room, almost. I didn't know, so I had to write something down what I thought you would be. I thought you might be someone, you is correct, yes. Maybe you want to ensure quality in your company. Maybe you're affected by quality in your company. You might be even more harder to enforce quality throughout your entire organization. You might be the reason why somebody is decreasing quality. You might be interested in quality. You might be fanatic about quality. You might also ignore quality. I don't know. Is this true? Somehow? Yeah. Did I miss anybody? Okay. Almost. About this presentation. Testing in quality is a very broad topic. We need to somehow define what we're going to do today and what not. What we're not doing. We're not talking about when is the right moment to test. Who is testing in my team? Who's not? How do I identify which test cases to test, which not? Different test methodologies, the tools Microsoft delivers in their client products, the test edition of Visual Studio Team System. There are other sessions covering that. What is covered is Team Foundation Server, it's customization, it's quality features within Team Foundation Server, whatever that might be. Now, the interesting question is there such a dialog box? I was looking for this dialog box. Do you know that? Have you turned that on in your Team Foundation Server? You should really do that. It's so easy, isn't it? The problem is it's not that easy. Team Foundation Server is a great tool. Microsoft delivers a great tool, great value. We can use. The problem is we need to know what we want to do. They don't even help us how many team projects and what granularity to create. There's no guidance. It's just, here's a server. It can do a lot of things. You just need to find out the right way how, and you need to know what you want. And it's good to have flexibility, but at some point you like a solution of some point. So how can Team Foundation Server help us? If you look at the whole Team Foundation Server, there are a lot of features in there. Every of these areas in the middle here at the heart, Team Foundation Server, project management, work item tracking, version control, reporting, team build. Every single section has a lot of features in there, huge list, and every could possibly somehow contribute to your whole cycle of quality and how we're working together. Maybe, if you use them accordingly. And I want to give you just some ideas what you might do, what you might think about, how you can customize the system, etc. Who of you is using a Team Foundation Server today? Okay. Who is thinking about using a Team Foundation Server? The next few, I don't know what. Yeah. Okay, also. Mm-hmm. So this would be my draft agenda. What do you think? Any points you'd like to get added or? Zero? Okay, good. So I have 6 points I want to definitely show you. If you have other questions, if you're new to the topic or anything I have not covered, just ask. There's nothing I really have to show you, it's just ideas. So we can use all the 70 minutes also for questions or whatever you might have on the way. So the first thing we should look at are the processes, because Microsoft tells us, well, you can choose your process that perfectly fits your situation. You can customize Team Foundation so that it really fits into your corporation. Wow, sounds really good. What do they mean? So the primary concept is a work item. You know, you have work items like box, requirements, tasks, everything you can track and you can manage in a system like a Team Foundation server. And those you can definitely customize to your own needs and do a lot of things with them. And let's start about looking at a few things. I have an agile project right now created, and I will show you a work item definition. So that looks better. So interesting thing number one is, per every team project, you can select a different process. Even if your whole organization has one process, there might be a reason for having another process. For example, Microsoft divides its work into a development team and a documentation team. And obviously the documentation bug, it would be nice that it does not look like a software bug, because a software bug you need the operating system version and environment information, and a documentation bug is like on which page, okay, it's an online documentation, there's no page anymore, on which URL did you find it, where on the page, and something like that. So they have a process just for the documentation team that is very similar to Scrum, and they have created their own separate team project just to manage those people who are writing. And they have the whole development division, 2,000 people working in one team project, managing their development work, just to be able to have two different processes. So number one is, each team project can have another process. Now, when you create a new process in Team Foundation Server, it asks you to specify which process template you want to use. So do you want to do it in an agile way? Do you want to use Scrum way, CMMI way? And on the other hand, Microsoft tells you, well, you can change the process whenever you like, but the dialogue is not reappearing anywhere. So how can I do that? So basically, if you choose a process template when you create a new team project, this is only a script for creating your team project. Everything that this script does, you could have done it manually as well. Okay, this is the dialogue you've probably seen already, so you can choose your process. Your team project, after it is created, does not even know which process template it created it. It just knows, okay, I know I have to think of bugs, tasks, and I don't know, in one case it's requirements, in the other it's scenario. That's all your team project knows about. It does not know that it is an agile team project. Maybe it isn't anymore. Maybe you started with agile, but you customized the bug. It looks different. Or you added something else, what was not planned by Microsoft in the agile template. So the differences between both process templates are not too huge. This is the agile bug. If we look at the CMMI bug, the more formal bug, in a few minutes, it just has one more state before active, which is proposed, and that's it. So if you ask me which would be the right process template for us to start, well, it's not agile, it's not CMMI, it's probably something you want to do. But don't start with zero. Take one of the Microsoft process templates that looks good for you and just customize it like we will do in a few seconds. So what is good about this process thing here, the workflow, you can see you have states like active, resolved, and closed. You have reasons. So with the reasons, you have the situation that it is very easy to remember the workflow. You only have to remember three things. It's active, it can be resolved, it can be closed. With resolved, Microsoft means it's developed, implemented, and ready to be tested. So if you have a new bug, you put it in the system, and it gets active. So now as a project manager, you can say, yes, we will do that, and you can say, no, we won't. If you say no this way, you can defer it. You can say, oh, it's obsolete now. I can't reproduce it. Can't reproduce at Microsoft is one of the most typical answers. This is Microsoft's default answer. As designed, it's not a bug. It's definitely a feature. It's a duplicate. We have it in the system already, or it's been fixed through someone else. Then it gets directly to close. If you really want to do it, you will assign it to a developer. The state is still active. And the developer will develop, he will check in using Visual Studio, and it will automatically get fixed when he checks in and also marks that you worked on this bug. Then we'll resolve. Resolve means the tester can now start testing. And the tester will say, okay, this works for me, and confirm that it's fixed, or if it doesn't work, he will put it back to active. He has three possibilities here. It's resolution denied, like I do not like your solution, but you did something. Wrong fix, you did something, but didn't fix something else. And test failed, did you fix something? So three possibilities to not do your work as a tester. Let's take a brief look at MSF CMMI. This is the other template. It has a few other work items like requirements, issues, risks. Let's look at the bug, bug states. And now the only thing that changed is we have now this proposed. So something that has to be planned is first in the initial state proposed until someone from the project management team looks at it and says, we are really going to do that, and sets it to active. Interesting is that here is a something like an if statement, because on a proposed of a bug, you might be able to decide if you want to do that as a project manager, because you can think about how much effort will be necessary to fix this bug. But maybe you have no clue, absolutely no clue. You have a bug, you think, I don't know how long it will take. I don't know. I'd have to ask a developer. So you can set it to active, but put it on a reason called investigate. So the developer gets a bug, it's active, but now it's investigate, so he knows, oh, it's not about developing, it's about looking at it, giving an estimate, maybe doing some prototyping, and then returning it to proposed with investigation complete. And if the project manager likes what he sees, if he likes the number, he will say approved and put it back to active. So here we have also this effort estimation process in here. All those processes, all the fields, all the work item types which are managed by TFS is something you have to decide. This is a nice starting point, nice ideas by Microsoft, but it's not your problem, it's not your solution. You have to find, what do I need? Do you want a track box? Okay, everybody wants a track box. You need tasks, you need maybe a feature or something. You might need a requirement or only one work item, one do something item. I don't know, you have to decide that. If you don't like one of the items here, like the risk, you don't take care of risk, okay, delete the risk. Let's change one of the processes to something more useful. So this is the Agile bug, and for some reason, we decide we'll have a project, we work for a customer, and the customer says, well, when you're done with testing, we want to do a customer test. We also want to check that the bug is fixed as we think it is fixed, so can we have a second testing phase in here? Okay, we can. So we would now change a running process, that means process editor, process types, export work item type, from the running AdventureWorks project. The AdventureWorks project knows about three work item types, bug, task, quality of service requirement, which is a nice English word for a technical, non-functional requirement. A scenario, something like a requirement, just lighter, and the risk. So we want to change the bug in the running AdventureWorks project. Obviously, everything at Microsoft is now XML, as is this definition. Open the XML. Take some time. Thank God we have an editor for them. We don't need to modify the XML. But it takes some time, because it's a power tool. If you ever ask yourself why Microsoft develops power tools, there is a real good reason for it. If you were a developer and now get into a higher position at Microsoft and are your project manager, you would not pass the test to be allowed to actively develop anything at Microsoft, except power tools, because they do not have the same security test process. So as a program manager, you could still be the manager of the whole team and write a small power tool. And this is allowed, so this is why there are power tools at Microsoft. At least a social reason behind it. So now we have the bug. The bug is defined through a lot of fields. This is the database structure. We have the layout. This is the form that you see in Visual Studio and Web Access. And we have the workflow. So let's start with something. I think we should add a new state. Well, let's make it simple. Let's add a new field. A problem I have with the layout today is that we have this field called priority at a bug. Now, my first question is, which priority? Whose priority? The customer's priority? The developer's priority? I'm sure they're not the same. Oh, that's a project manager as well. So we have a lot of priorities for a bug. So let's add another priority. We want everybody who enters a new bug to have another priority. Let's call it the customer feelings priority. So how does my customer feel about this? As an info text, a ref name is something like your company. Let's say it's dev days.castfieldpriority. We have a rule. Yes, it should be a required field for everybody. 3 times okay, save. Now we need to change the modify the layout, otherwise we won't see that field anywhere. So where could we put it? Maybe in the third column over here might be a good idea. Yeah, we could put it in here. Now let's do this. But you have to see we have a hierarchical structure of groups and columns and so forth. So this is one group. This is one group with a name. This is also one group. This third group has 3 columns in there. Then we have a tab group, and the tab group has tab pages on it. So everything in one tree. Now we have to find the third group, group 1, group 2, group 3. The third column, there's the priority field, and we add a new one, which will be field name. The last one is Dev Days Cas Fel Pre, and this is felt priority. What does our customer feel? Save. Now we need to re-import the new definition, process editor, work item types, import work item type. To the AdventureWorks project, browse from hard drive, bug XML, open, OK. After a few nights, you can do that in a few seconds. There is a command line as well, if you like that more. If you have to repeat that too many times. Now I need to refresh my work items node here, because I'm on the machine that just imported the new settings, so my cache won't be updated. And now when I try to enter a new bug, nothing happens. Oh, I'm in the wrong project. How about trying to create a bug in the AdventureWorks project? Add bug. Way better. So if I try to save after I put in a title, he will tell me, well, the field customer feelings priority cannot be empty. So we establish a new rule, and it's already active. And the new field is everywhere, and the new rule is valid everywhere as well. Look at web access. It recompiles. ASP.NET, not precompiled, not a power. It's not always a power tool. No, in this case, it's a solution Microsoft bought, so it's not extensible. But it runs. It will get a Microsoft product soon. Refresh cache, create new bug. Test bug, try to save it, customer feelings priority can be empty. Okay. We could change the customer feelings priority to something more useful though. Let's take the XML file again. Where is it? There it is. That's a powerful number. And let's define our field for customer feelings priority has a list, and the user has to select one of the allowed values from that list. So what could that be? We could say, well, the default priority is high. There is a priority even higher. And there's a priority very critical. So nobody would ever select something like low or medium, so we don't even start with that. One customer once asked me about the priority field that Microsoft has, because they have 1, 2, 3 as a priority. Should 1 or 3 be the highest priority? And I always say take 1, because if you take 3, it's so easy to add 4, 5, 6, and 7 is an even more important priority. So always take 1. Yeah. Okay, you could add minus 1, minus 2, I know, but it's not as nearly as nice as just counting upwards. Import work item into the AdventureWorks project. Let's browse it from the hard drive. Mark XML open, OK. Right click refresh. You're getting used to that. So, test. Now I can select, OK, this is an even higher bug. Felt priority equals 2. I can save it. Now he compiles the Team Foundation Server web service for the first access. Save bug 69. The new field I introduced is almost as good as all the system fields that Microsoft has. That means I can filter about it. For example, what does the full name customer feelings priority is now a field on the filter query builder list. I can see, okay, give me all even higher bugs from our database. Oh, there is one, it's bug 69. Let's save this query of all even higher bugs. And so we introduce a new query. If we change that work item, let's go to 69. We change it from 2 to 1. The history should also reflect that, because it's a real field that works like all other fields in a work item. Ooh. It's not easy to mark with a touchpad. Multi-touch would be good for that. Windows multi-touch. Okay, so this was an introduction of a new field. Just very, very easy. The only thing with the rules that you just saw, like required rule, allowed values rule, the rules are always looking at one work item at a time. You cannot define any rule over multiple work items. For example, you have a requirement and task below a requirement. You can't say the task cannot be closed unless all the other way around. The requirement cannot be closed if not all the tasks are already closed. You cannot define something like that because the rules always look at one particular work item at a time. So now we have the customer scenario that the customer wants to have his own customer review state. So we will introduce a new customer review. This transition now moves from customer review to closed. And we will have a new transition link from resolved to customer review. Now when our tester says everything is okay, the customer has the second chance. The tester will just say ready for review. For review. That is the only reason allowed. And now the customer can just say it's okay. Or the customer can say, no, it's not okay. Back to development. Development was in the active state. It's over here. Oh, that looks good. I especially like the feature of bridge building. That's nice. It's not so easy to implement, is it? There's an automatic layout feature. I'm not sure if I should recommend that, but sometimes it works. No, it's better in this case. Yeah. Active, resolve, customer review, closed. It works. So this is the way back from customer review to active. So what should be a valid reason for a customer to send it back to development? He doesn't like what we did. Let's take something realistic. Don't like you. Not secure enough. Wrong color is good. That's a good one. Too late, do it again. So default is I don't like you. Save. New process is safe. We just need to import it, which is just a matter of a few clicks. You see I'm not doing that for the first time, obviously. And now let's do it in Web Access. Web Access to refresh as well. Now we create a new bug. So there is a new bug in your application. I need a failed customer priority, obviously. It's 3 high. Save. Now I'm a developer. I would use Visual Studio. I would check in. And after check-in, it will move to resolve. Now it's time for the tester. The tester looks at it and says, yeah, that's okay. Let's give it to the next state. It's a customer review. We are ready for review. And now the customer can decide if he goes to close and says, yep, that's fine, or if he goes back to development, to active, and says no. We will say, more realistic, no. Wrong color. Save. Now it's again the developer. He changes something. He checks in again. It's resolved. Let's go to the customer review. Ready for review. Now the customer says, okay, I like it this time. Let's go to closed, reason fixed. And the good thing about WebEx, that's why I use it in this case, is if you go to the history tab and scroll down a bit, you see the whole history of this work item, including your own states and your reasons, in a more graphical way. I could also open it and I would see the whole lifetime of this work item. So it started with reason you, it got active. Then because it was fixed, it got resolved. Because it was ready for review, it got to customer review. Then the customer decided to say, no, wrong color, back to active. Then again, fixed to resolved, ready for review to customer review, and fixed to closed. Okay. So it's pretty much easier to get a sense of what happened to this work item 70 than if you would use just a Team Explorer here. You can do the comparison. all you get in the history of Visual Studio is this. Well, it's the same information, right? But it's not the same. Okay, that's interesting. We have new fields, we have new states, we can always change that. We can even delete states if we want. This is super possible. You can add required fields later, also not a problem. It's interesting though, but there are a few things that you can do. Especially what you can do if you introduce required fields later, there is one additional rule you can use, which is called allow existing value, which means whatever your new rules say, it's not valid for old values, because he only validates when you press on save. So he will then look at, okay, if the value is unchanged, the old value is okay, it's fine. If you change the value, he will try to assess the new rules, like you have to enter it or a new other, the list may be changed of allowed values or something. So allow existing value is especially important. It's even important for things like the assigned to field. Because if you change your display name in Active Directory, you're not the same user again for TFS. This is interesting. So there's no marrying anymore. Because marriage would change your name probably. So it's not good for your Active Directory. You should never change your name. You should always never leave a company. It's also not good. If you leave a company, deactivate your account in Active Directory. Do not remove it. If you remove it, you can't save the work item because assigned to user has a wrong value. So allow existing value is a good addition to the assigned to fields as well. So what else can we do? We could define that the resolved to customer review, the second phase, which is essentially the testing part, should not be done by the same guy that already implemented the bug fix. That's why we do a process, right? So let's do that. Let's define that, for example, no, at the end. It's only a problem at the end, maybe, that we say state rules, or is it a rule for this one here? Let's define a new rule for closed by. Closed by field, not same as. The dialog is gone. Closed by, rules, new, not same as. It's a definite feature. It's a part rule. Let's try again. I could select it, but that shouldn't work as well. Where is the field? We could also try to take resolved by or something. Does anybody see resolved by? This is obviously not sorted by anything useful. Not same as rule. It's gone. Resolved by. New. Can I do it? Another rule like required? Required works. How about not same as? Did he put it in there? No, he didn't. So this would be a nice demonstration of how you could not assign the same user to something you've already done. Let's try another transition, just to try it. Let's say resolve by may not be the same as something else. No. He doesn't like it anymore. So probably this is one of the things I usually do when directly manipulating XML files. The problem with this editor is it's not a good one. They have a lot of bugs in here. It might happen that Visual Studio tries to get more than 2 gigabytes of RAM. You just restart and try again, and it works. If you have the feeling that the windows take you more than 30 seconds to open, restart Visual Studio. Then you can work with it. It's definitely better than XML editing, but it's not far away from perfect. Okay, we couldn't change that, but we can change something else. We could introduce blocking reasons. So sometimes I have work items. Let's say we have 20 tasks. All 20 tasks are assigned to me. And on the other hand, I'm blocked because of something. I'm waiting for someone else from my team to do something, to deliver me something. Or I'm waiting for Microsoft to deliver a service pack for something, otherwise I can't fix this bug, for example. So I know all 20 items are assigned to me, but essentially I can only actively work on 3 of those. So what are we going to do with the other 7 ones which are not actively developed on, which are blocked in kind of a way? There is a field called issue, and there's a field called block. In this agile work item, I think it's the issue field that is part of it, yes. It's an issue field. You can just set the issue to true, and you mark it as, I can't work on it. I know it's assigned to me, but I can't actively work on it. So what would be an interesting thing is, let's add another field. Let's call it issue depends on. So for the block reason, what is the reason that you cannot work on this? Full name, dev days, is step on. And this field is when, this is essentially an if the issue field says yes, you have to give me a reason. It's required. And you can select suggested values. You might just enter free text, or you can select from a list with all users of this TFS. Global Team Foundation Valid Users. And when we're not blocked, when not issue is yes, then make it empty and read only. Save. Now we need to put this field somewhere. There's the issue field, and I will put a new control next to the issue field and call it is dependent on reason, or let's call it block reason. Import and see what happens. Adventure works. Bug XML. Open. Yes. Right click. Refresh. Right click. New bug. Test. Field priority. Very critical. Save. Now at any point I can say this bug is now an issue. So the block reason gets to a field that is required. I can just select someone else on my team, like my build process. I'm waiting on my build process. That's good. I could also wait for something totally different. I could wait for myself. Oh, you need a title. You need a priority. I could wait for some text like .NET Framework. Service spec. And now using the queries, I can build a few nice queries like, give me all work items where issue is yes and I'm assigned. That means, where am I waiting? And give me the field, what the reason is, or who it is on my team. What did I call it? It's issue dependent on. I think it was issue dependent on. You know, you have to take the internal display name again. So it's issue dependent, yes. So you can see there are three items that are assigned to me, and one should not be assigned to me. Let's assign it to someone else. So two items. I'm waiting for a user called TFS service, and I'm waiting for Microsoft to fix up a service pack for a .NET framework. Good. Next query. Who's waiting for me? Give me all work items where issue is yes and where issue depends on. Issue. Whoop. Is it in the list? Issue depends on is me. So who's waiting for me? And we need as a column the assigned to field, because this is the guy waiting for me. And it's TFS service who's waiting for me. So by just using plain text fields and a few small rules and the query feature, you can build some very interesting things. And in this case, we have a full management of who's waiting on his colleagues in our team, and we can see, we get a list of who do I have to ask if he's finished or who's waiting for me at that moment. Now there's even more we can do. We could also do some things like, while the developer is developing, he could just mark the work item, also with a new field, and say, does this require any documentation changes? Because a documentation change is a good example for something you will not probably do every time you do a bug. Something like developing and testing, you do that with every bug. But do you want to put every bug through a documentation team, through a setup building team? It's something you will do, well, maybe. It depends on the bug, right? So then we cannot do like, okay, you can choose a state, documentation or setup, or you can say close. We have to have some kind of process. And the best guy who can tell us if we need documentation or setup changes is the developer. So we could ask the developer while he is developing to set, does this require documentation change? Yes. And then the work item cannot be closed until someone from the documentation team fills out another field which says, yes, I documented it, and just puts his name in there. So we would not allow the transition to close from a work item before you don't have a sign-off by the documentation team, the setup team, only if the developer said that we should do any changes over there. So this is also something you could easily do. Let's just do a quick example of that requires documentation changes. Dev days, Rick, doc. Does this change require any changes to the documentation? Allowed values are yes or no. There is no checkbox or something. The checkbox in TFS looks like this. Allowed values yes and no. Did I say 9?
No.
We could say maybe. How about that? We should not allow maybe. Now we have yes and no, and we have the field. We could also have a second field. What should be changed then? Let's make this a plain text field so you can enter multiple lines of code and of whatever comments you have. Dev days, what should be changed then? This gets obviously required at that moment where requires documentation change is yes. Now this is a very good start. We need it in on the layout somewhere. Let's create a new tab and call this development. And the new tab has a control, has two controls on it. The first control is requires documentation change. The second control is what should be changed. The second one gets a multi-line text control, HTML field control. The first one stays the same. Requires documentation changes. Now let's see how this works out. Import. Now the developer could always say, okay, this really requires a documentation change, and puts it to yes, and then this is a required field. You need to recreate the screenshots. And now while the tester is testing, someone from the documentation team could say, hey, give me all non-closed bugs that have requires documentation change to yes. So he always has a list and he can work in parallel to the rest of the development team, which are testing the bug fix, that the bug fix is correct. We should definitely control now that if someone tries to go on the to put this work item on close, that this is not allowed before some of the documentation team has not approved this. Let's do a sign-off sheet. Let's add a new tab page. Right-click, new tab page. Let's call it sign-off. So we're collecting signatures on that page. We create a new control. We need a field for that. Documentation change sign-off. Dev days. Doc change sign off. And we should have a rule that only people from the documentation team can then put their name in there. I'm not doing that, I have no documentation team group, I'm a single user here, but you should definitely consider security on that field. So we add a new control. Doc change sign off. And the rule now is, if you want to close that work item, so you go to the closed state, last transition, and the sign-off field is then required when the developer says there is something to document. Requirements.changes is to yes, then this sign-off field gets required. And since you have security on that field, nobody can fill it out, and the team doing on the documentation, working on the documentation. Yes, customer feelings priority, always keep forgetting that. Now again, let's say development, changes required, yes, any text, and now we move on, resolved, customer review, closed, and now he says, whoa, closed is not allowed because you have to put some value in doc change sign off, and we could only maybe do that with appropriate rights, permissions. So the good news is you can totally customize a lot of things that are in the work item space. The bad news is, well, you have to do that. And you see, it's not too much fun working all night and right-clicking and pressing refresh on the work item node. But this is something you probably do one time, and all the other modifications you can do on the, you know, while you work on the project, on the real-life project. I would encourage you not to sit down for weeks and try to get a process template that looks good for your organization, but just start with one of the Microsoft process templates and just change small things like we did. We actually started with the Agile template today, and we just changed a bit here, a bit there, put a new field here, put a new state there. So you could have a team meeting, talk to your team, what do we need, what is missing, what fields do we really need in a bug, and you can just insert the fields afterwards. So it's no waterfall architecture. You have to sit down for weeks and think about what would be a great process and then try to implement. Just do it while you work with the TFS. So how about conflicts when you change your process template, your running process template? Do you have a conflict in mind? Good question. What happens, for example, when you remove a state? If I remove the customer review state that we just introduced, again, because we have no customer anymore that wants to review it, if anything is currently in that state, it's still in the database because it's only a string field on the SQL server underneath. You can move it to any state at that moment. So what you would do, you as a customizer, you would just customize it, remove the state, and you would move it all to, then it's probably closed with reason fixed. So you should do that. Otherwise, the users could really choose any other state. Even if it's not allowed to move that transition, they can just move it to any valid state then. So again, you have the free choice of process, but only per team project. Team projects are something very big in TFS, and only one team project per one process per team project, that way around. You can add fields, add rules, workflows, you've seen that. This is just a small summary after all of our topics here. So the second point, just forget about the work items almost. Let's look at quality gates. Quality gates is something that, for example, also Microsoft uses to control the quality of something that flows into their main branch. So what Microsoft did when they developed Visual Studio 2008, they separated the development in 1,700 branches just to be able to control the quality of every small feature. So every feature, when they said, oh, we're finished, there was some guy coming and said, okay, you have to fulfill 11 quality gates. Do you have a code coverage of 70%? You have? Okay. Do you have a security guy that signed you off? Oh, you have? Okay. So security guy is also something very interesting. Security guy is just someone who gives advice to the team, like performance advisors. They have no permissions at all at Microsoft. The only problem is, at sign-off, at the quality gates, they have to sign that they are confident with the security level of what they advised. So this is where they could get a problem. And if a feature that happened with Visual Studio, the last version, does not meet the quality gates that Microsoft has internally for themselves, it would not go into the main product. And so how can you work with quality gates? How can you assure that the list of things you and your team decided for yourself as quality gates, your checklist, is really assured that the people do what is in there? I mean, nobody's reading a Word document with, okay, you have to run this test, this static analysis tool before checking it. And you probably heard that TFS has a capability called check and policies. So you can say things like, okay, you have to select, let's make it bigger, at least one work item when you check in. You have to at least give me a comment when you check in. And I'd like you to do maybe something like static code analysis. Yes, all the rules. I do have a project somewhere lying around, like this here. Open a project. Takes a few seconds. Make a meaningful change and check it in. So what is good is we get the checklist that we usually would have in an email or in a Word document, and we can just read it off from Visual Studio and we see, okay, oh yes, I almost forgot about the comment. And this is not something to really force a developer that he has to do something or to constrain him. It's more that developers keep forgetting that they wanted to put something into the comments field. I usually kept forgetting it. And now, with this help, it really makes it less possible to forget about adding a comment. For example, now I added the comment. Now he says, okay, you must associate with one or more work items. Let's associate a work item. Let's come back. There's only one point left. And now he says, well, we have code coverage active, but this project does not even have code coverage activated. Oh, that's not good. So let's do that. There is a merge somewhere. Oh, it's on the top level. Copy policies from check and policy into my project. Now he will say, okay, now you activated the code coverage, but you have not code coverage, the code analysis, but you have not even built an up-to-date build. So if you activate this code analysis rule and you even set it to check for none of the rules from Microsoft, you get that he has to compile first before he can check it, even if he checks for zero rules. And now all check-in policies are satisfied, you could now check in. So it makes it really easier for that what you decided, put your checklist in form of check-in policies in here so nobody can accidentally check in and forget about a comment or something else you really wanted to do. And if it is not enough what you find in TFS, you know what, you can build your own. And I had a customer, he had a real interesting requirement. Let's build one check-in policy. TFS check-in policy 1 in C temp looks good. That's a perfect name for check-in policy. Now the check-in policy has a base class, the policy base, and all you need to worry about is just one method. It's somewhere here, and it's called evaluate. You get the whole change set in, all files modified, what the user tries to do, add files, remove files, change encoding, I don't know. And you can decide if you will let him check in or not. All you have to do is put something in this failures collection. So I could create a check-in policy that is always failing. It would look like this. New policy failure, no check-ins allowed. So this definitely always fails. Let's do something more meaningful. So I had a customer, he told me, well, we have a quality problem because our people in the evening, they check in, the quality in the evening is worse than in the morning. We would love to have a check-in policy controlling if anyone tries to check in after 5 p.m. and only allow it in the morning after 5 a.m. again. Interesting. Okay, so daytime now, hour. So if we are between, let's say, 14... and smaller 15, sorry, you're too tired, no check-ins, later, save, I need to copy the reg file, copy always. So let's build, that looks good. I have a script in here, a custom post build script that does a lot of things for me. Build events, post build step. So I X copy my DLL to drive C. It's way easier to reference it if it's directly on my C drive. So this is why it's lying around in drive C. And it already registers my reg file because I need to register all the check-in policies locally. So this will be the name of my DLL. And you have to take the same name, copy, and put it in here. Yep, check-in policies. Now, this is all I need to register my check-in policy. Rebuild. Rebuild all succeeded. Sounds good to me. Now we should have this new check-in policy available. Source control, check-in policy, add. And there is the C tech days could not load. It's not tech days. It's not this one. Which is it? Do I have a name for it? Oh, it's check-in policy. I have a perfect name. It's called check-in policy. Because I have not set a name. You can set the names and everything, the constants at the bottom here. This is the name of the check-in policy, for example. But let's stick with check-in policy. It's a super name. Now we try to check in again. And this time you get, okay, I have no comments. I could change it to the comments. But we have a second problem. Sorry, you're too tired. No check-ins later. So you can write your own check-in policies to check whatever you always wanted to check. You can run custom code analysis tools, quality tools. Just make sure that everything is done what you really want to have done before checking in code. Now the good news is Microsoft is taking that to a new level with the next Team Foundation server. I'm not sure if you heard that. It's called gated check-in. What they will do with gated check-in is that if you press check-in, he will not check you in. He will shelf all your changes on the server. He will call your build process, run the latest version from the server plus your changes, and if that build process, including unit tests, succeeds, then you check in. He will check you in. If that does not succeed, you have never checked in. So there are no more broken builds because you never checked in. There was no check-in transaction involved. So check-in in TFS 2010 is no check-in anymore. Yes, please.
And also change check-in policy that's already delivered by
Oh, can I change the check-in policy? What do you like to change? Yes.
You cannot run code analysis. It comes with a very nasty message that says you must install a developer edition or a Team Suite.
Installing is not the problem. The problem is buying a Team Suite or a developer edition. Yes. Installing would not be our problem. It's pricing. Yes.
It's a really stupid message.
I know. You're not the first one that raises this question in this voice about that direction. You could easily build your own check-in policy that uses FXCop, which is the free version of the static code analysis engine. But you cannot modify the Microsoft version. You would have to write your own. But you see, it can be two lines of code. It's super simple to write your own one. When you find the sample code of this presentation, later at the website, I guess it is, I'm not sure, you will have this process template here. It's not a process template anymore. Completely stupid. It's a project template. Visual Studio project template for check-in policies. You can use that. Just change the evaluate method. Take a better name than I chose for the check-in policy and get started. That's it.
Where can I find it?
You will get the presentation somehow, and you will get it from me then with the presentation. Does anybody know? Is it a download of the site? Okay. So you will have a download for it. You can send me an email as well if you need it earlier. That's another point. So that looks good. Let's cancel all the things I've done. There's a small problem that project managers have with all those features like check-in policies. Because maybe you've seen that as a developer, you can also override check-in policies. So you all know that you want to check in and you get this dialogue, oh, there are three things you have to do and it's not the wrong time. And you can say, you know what? Not now. I have no motivation to do any check-in policies. But you have to supply a reason. And it's not a space. But a dot is okay. So you can write something like, no, not today, and check it in. So every project manager asks me, can I turn that off somehow? No. Override is always possible, but you can be notified. You can now get an email. You can now get an, automatically send an email to the HR department. Yeah. No further comment. So it's super easy if you have the power tools, again, power tools installed. You can take the alerts editor and you can just say, okay, new alert, alert me when check-in happens in a specific folder with a policy overridden. You insert your email in here. It's adventure works local in this case. And that's it. You will get all emails in this team project when someone tries to check into AdventureWorks and he has a policy override comment that is not empty. That means he had to override it. Then you will get an email now. The alternative would be to use Excel to just get a report, like once a week, proactively look into a list where all the policy overrides are in there. But you can also have an email that you like more. Yes, please.
Where was it, the power tool?
It's the TFS power tools, Microsoft Team Foundation Server power tools on the Microsoft website. Yes. So the alerts editor is part of it, as well as the process editor we just saw. Okay, we had the quality gates, we had the policies, the check-in policies. Really, a check-in policy for me is something like a warning, something like an automatic checklist that helps you just remember what you all wanted to do before checking in. It's not something that will 100% assure that everybody does it because you have the override. If someone wants to fool you, he can. It's still the case, but it's more like a warning that you cannot forget something by accident or by mistake. So then we have code review processes. If you want to do code review, you could also use all the tools that we had in TFS. It would be, let's say we want to learn the following thing. The developer says he's finished. He saves his code and he wants it reviewed. We do not want to have it checked in, right? We have these policies to prevent that he can check in. There is one check-in policy called you have to check a work item when you check in, and not any work item. Let's say you have to check a work item of type review that has to be in the state approved. And this review process, it's a regular work item. You could define it that only certain people from the super project managers, super architects group are allowed to take review work items and say, okay, this is approved. So no developer without that work item can check in anymore. Then developers would take their things, step one, put the code that is almost done on the shelf, on a TFS, this is a private shelf. They create a new work item of type review, would be an idea. Then their colleague, the super architect, opens that shelf, opens the review work item, checks it. If he likes it, he says approved. It goes back to the developer, and he can now check in. He can specify a review work item that is now approved, and he's allowed now to check in. So in this case, you would use a new work item type. So all I've done is I have a work item type review for that, which is available in the CMMI template if you want to use it. You would need a query for work item query for give me all review items, or all approved review items. You're using the shelf set feature that you can put code on the server privately without affecting the main branch or the work of the others. And that's basically it. And the check-in policy. Yeah. Check-in policy only work items from query mentioned above. So this is a nice combination of using a work item with a workflow, using a work item query, using a shell set feature from the version control, and using the check-in policy, which is there. And all four combined would be a nice code review solution. Why not? And this combination is something you have to come up with, because TFS has no code review by itself, but since it has all those small features, you could build it your own, or just use it that way, that you have a code review mechanism. Now, another thing, what I already mentioned, was this isolate by feature that Microsoft tries to isolate every feature on a single branch, and then manage all those branches and check when they are ready that all those release criteria, those quality gates are really satisfied, and then they merge it into the main branch. So they never have a merge conflict on their main branch, but always they take all the new changes up to the thousands branches above, And so they have all the merge conflicts at the top and never on the main branch. So the integration always takes place in the feature branches. So your main branch will never get corrupted. You had a question?
Yeah, I was wondering, when you were referring to the policies.
Yes. Oh, how about gated check-ins, the new gated check-ins in 2010 and check-in policies? Well, check-in policies are still overridable, but the gated check-in executes steps as part of the build process. And those steps are not overridable. If you say the build process fails when the static code analysis finds anything, then the build process failed and you have not checked in. So this is a more complete and more secure solution. Yes. Check-in policies is more a reminder and warning. And the gated checking is really okay. There is no other way if it doesn't compile. So an idea would be to create one branch per feature. This is obviously a lot of work to do if you really want to do that. So all individual feature work takes place on small branches. As soon as one of the feature teams says, I'm complete, they get all the new stuff that the other teams have done from the main line. They get that all integrated into their branch. So all merge conflicts are at their feature branch. They have to somehow find time to resolve them. And afterwards, there's someone checking the quality and says, okay, did you really, the whole checklist, did you satisfy all our quality gates? And if yes, we merge it to the main branch. And this merging is really only a copy process, just a copy down to the main. Nobody has changed main since they have started the integration. And then you're pretty secure that nothing changes on the main line. Now then we have the build verification test from the build side of the Team Foundation server. You probably know that if you even use the default wizard of the build server, you get a pretty impressive build script. You can compile everything you have. He will run your unit tests if you're using the Microsoft unit test structure, your web tests, everything that comes out of the Microsoft test tools. And you can do the code analysis from the development edition. And this is something you really get automatically. And it's a must to have a server-side build process. I've been at a customer a few months ago and asked him, well, how's your build process doing? And they, thanks, he's fine. Like, what, he? I meant your build process. Yes, he's Mike. Mike? Yeah, he was an older guy sitting at the window. Yeah. And he's the build process. If they need a new release, I say, Mike, new release. And Mike's doing the new release. If Mike's on vacation, there's no new release. That's easy. And so a server-side build process, I think you will also see it in the same way, is a must today because you have these problems like it works on my machine. You have to have a most possibly clean machine where you do your builds. And a build process is definitely more than just compiling. The compiling is just to check that everything that is checked in by all your developers works. But just compilation doesn't say it even starts. So you have to do a lot of testing. Whatever you can possibly automatically do, just do it. Even the static code analysis. Do you use the Microsoft static code analysis of XCOMP? Have you ever tried to put all rules on a project? You get like 200 messages. And this is because the list is limited to 200. By the way, there's a registry patch to limit it to 1,000. So you can see all of them, but it doesn't make it better. So there's a lot of noise. But the interesting thing is everything that the build process creates, and let's say you make one build a day, and you have 500 warnings from the static code analysis. The interesting point is not that you have 5,000 or 500 warnings. Doesn't matter. Interesting is, how about 7 days later? Is it still 500? Is it 600? Is it 400? If it's 400, you're good. If it's 500, it's okay. If it's 700, you have to talk to somebody. So the trend is the really interesting thing behind values like the code analysis. So whatever you can do, automatic testing, quality assurance, do it. Use the Team Foundation Server Build Wizard. He's there. You can use it on day 3, I usually say, because you can really very early start with it. He will also collect values like how many changes were there in the whole source code. He creates like code churn values. He creates static analysis warnings, for example, compiler warnings. He's counting all those things. So if you want to have any report, any trend analysis by TFS, you really need to make sure you have a build process. The sooner, the better. I should have a build process somewhere here in the Agile team project. Which one is it? I think it's the second one. Let's take this one. Edit build definition. And I would set this to check in every time. The interesting thing now is I'm trying to do continuous integration. I want everybody who checks in that it triggers a build automatically. When would you do that? I mean, a build can take such a long time, but when would you do that? If you're the responsible person for your build process, and your developers keep breaking your build, who's the one who has to sit in the evening and repair the build process? Yes, it's you. Because nobody knows who actually killed the build process during the day. Everybody checked in, and the nightly build fails. So when everybody's on vacation the next day, just you are sitting there repairing the build. So this is the reason to have continuous integration. After every check-in, just those tiny changes will be compiled, and then the next, it will be queued up. So if the build fails, you can really say it was him. And there's even a check-in policy that the next guy cannot check in. He will get a message like, okay, your dear colleague, name, just accidentally broke your build, so you should not check in again. Yeah. So I need a project from, where is that project gone? The project is somewhere in here, Agile Team Project Main. It's called the mini solution, it has a few tests in there, and let's just kill it somehow, just take that away. Right now it does not compile anymore, it doesn't matter, we check it. Oh, it doesn't matter. Just get it checked in. And now I can configure my build notification tool to give me all the events. When something happens, I can configure my email client to get an email if I like to that the build has failed or the build is successful. So the same thing like with the policy overrides, I can use the alerts feature to get emails. In this case, we have the build started automatically, as you can see. We just wait for a result, and hopefully it's not successful. Still thinking. Oh yeah, the question is about build agent granularity. Yes, you can only define them on a per team project level. Yes. You would have to write a script and create it everywhere. There's no management at a level above. Yeah. You're also not the first to mention that indeed, yes. Good question. Let's see. It might be that this tool just doesn't refresh or something. That's view build status. He says, he still tells me that it's running for 2 minutes now. Oh, it's running and it's completed? Interesting. It's both. Let's look at the real list here at the I'm build, view builds. Oh, it failed. Probably I was too slow. I was too slow setting him up. So he didn't notify me. So I would get an email on the one hand, not I, but the guy that broke the build would get an email. And on the other hand, we would then get hopefully a notification, a balloon from the sidebar. He still says it's building and it's completed. It's a powerful build. But it works. Now, once you have this build process, a few other interesting things start, because my build process gathers a lot of information. You can open ready-to-use reports like quality indicators that will put everything that your build does in one diagram. Oh, I should not close that. So what you can see now is what happens to my build in the last couple of days. You see the unit test failing rate. I had 3 failing tests, now I have 3 running tests. Successful tests. I have the code coverage, which was at 100%, although not a single test was running. It went down to 50, went down to 100. This is not realistic, but never mind. You see it. You would also have something like a bug count. How many active bugs do you have in the system? It's 0 in my case. And you have a code churn, the code change rate. How many lines of code were added? How many lines of code were removed or changed? This is also 0 in my case. Don't ask why, but usually you would have something like a curve. And if that curve, for example, just look at that curve down here, if that curve would go up, and you think, or your team tells you, you're in a stabilization phase a week before release, and they tell you, yeah, we're just making a few fixes, and the night before the release, they check in a few small things, and then you can run this report, and if you see this bulb, you know, well, we might add two additional testing days. But you feel way better with the quality, with what happens in your system if you can see something. If you open a version control system today, like, I don't know, SourceSafe or something, you see a list of files. This system, without it you've done anything, shows you the change in files. It shows you how many bugs you have in the system. And if you have a build process, and that build process is really the default wizard build process, no customization, you get the test results, you get code coverage. And everything that you see in this report, you could write your own reports, but I'm not sure you ever tried that. It's the MDX language. I found a book at Microsoft Press. It's like 3,000 pages, and it's like the first steps with MDX query language. So like, what? It's not fun. It's too complicated. The easiest way to access all the data in your Team Foundation server is Excel. Use direct connection to analysis services and get all those data bits out of there. I could ask him for a list of people who check in with policy overrides. I could ask him for every build process with how many lines changed. I could ask him for how many work items we have in the system. You just need to have a question. You have a question? What can I ask him? I need something to ask. I could ask him, give me all work items in the system. He will tell you the answer of all questions is 68. Some thought 42, but it's 68. The answer of all questions. But you could probably do something more interesting, like add the assigned to. Now you know that 66 of these elements are assigned to me, and 2 to unknown, whoever is unknown. Let's take this one. Still unknown. Okay. Or we could, instead of this, we could work with builds. So no cumulative count, but let's look at builds, build start time, build type, and we want to analyze code coverage, blocks covered, code coverage not covered, code coverage count, lines covered. We could look at the static analysis warnings, static analysis errors. So I have constantly 24 warnings of my static code analysis. So you can get the compiler, static code analysis, code churn, testing results, all in columns. And if you're happy with what you created, you click on pilot table, and then you get what you want. For every build in the last couple of days, you can really see, okay, how did it change? How did my static analysis warnings change? Do people respect our naming conventions, or does it get worse? So there's a lot of data in the system. Really make sure to have a build process set up on day 3 of your project. The sooner the better. You will be helpful. You can then do trend analysis. Excel is the most, the easiest way and the most used way. Reports are there as well, like the quality indicator reports. There are a lot of metrics that are in there that you can collect and look at. So as we've seen, a lot of features. There's almost no guidance how you can use them. I hope that you've seen a few ideas how you can combine all the small features and small rules into something that makes use in your context, that helps you develop better software. Next session is about Team System. Today is how Microsoft is using Team System. It's right now in 15 minutes in the World Forum, if you'd like to see that, from a guy at Microsoft. This is my email address. If you need the samples way faster than the website is online, you can send me an email. Otherwise, you will get them over the regular ways. I say thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of Dev Days. Thanks for attending. Thank you for surviving the heat.